Hey everyone, welcome back to Mastering Defense Infrastructure. I'm Jess, and as always, I'm here with Darian, ready to unpack this next piece of the puzzle. Today's the last in our series on major defense programs, the Australia-Singapore Military Training Initiative, or ASMTI, if you want to sound like you've been in defense for a while. So I think to really frame this up, let's go back to where it all started, which is kind of recent history. The 2015 Comprehensive Strategic Partnership between Australia and Singapore kicked off these conversations, and by 2020, it became a formal treaty. That's a 25-year partnership, and look, it's a massive deal, not just for diplomacy, but for bricks, mortar, and training land out in Queensland.
Yeah, Jess, I always love when infrastructure decisions kick off with a handshake and a signature. Then 5 years later, you're buying 110,000 hectares of cattle land. But seriously, the core driver here is pretty clear. Singapore, they're kind of boxed in with just 700 square kilometres at home for training. So coming to Australia gives them literal room to breathe. For us, it's about giving the ADF access to world-class facilities and embedding that partnership. And I suppose, Jess, we talk a lot about why in this series. It's not just about Singaporean troops on our turf, it's about interoperable forces and shoring up regional security, which is really coming through the infrastructure lens this time.
Absolutely, and the numbers are staggering. $2.25 billion invested here, up to 14,000 Singaporean troops cycling through every year for as long as 18 weeks at a time. That's ramping up from what was basically a handful of short rotations. It's a strategic trade, land for investment, for both nations. The win for Singaporean training capability is obvious, but for Australia, I think what stands out is the elevated infrastructure in the north and all the stuff that comes with it. Jobs, engagement, and a tangible alliance.
And it's not just big picture geostrategic stuff, right? It starts at this really human level. Planning, contracting, local jobs. So the partnership isn't just theoretical. It's showing up everywhere from job sites to cultural partnerships. That's probably a good segue to look back at Shoalwater Bay, because that's where this transformation really became real. All right, so Shoalwater Bay, this place has always been famous in defence circles, but what's happened lately is on another level. Lang O'Rourke got the managing contractor gig in 2018, and next thing you know, they're expanding the footprint by over 110,000 hectares. That's not a typo. They built mock villages for urban combat, upgraded all the weapons ranges, new camp accommodation, field power, water, medical, pretty much the works. I mean, you'd walk on site in 2018 and think, not much here, and now it's a full training city.
And don't forget the ICT networks, because apparently you can't run a modern war game or army PowerPoint session without enough fibre and Wi-Fi. But I remember it wasn't just about the stuff they built. The process was really changing. Darian, you've got a story about one of your early on-site visits that kind of sums this up, right?
Yeah, this one sticks with me. Early days, I was out there for a site walk with some of the project team, and we had a traditional owner representative joining us. It was the first time I saw procurement teams really listening to cultural guidance, not just nodding politely, actually changing package scopes and site activities based on their advice. Honestly, you could feel the difference. It was the start of moving away from the old announce and defend model toward true co-design. That approach kept showing up in the way contracts were structured, and even in how environmental and heritage approvals got done.
That's the sort of thing that's now expected. Early, meaningful engagement rather than just ticking a box. And you're spot on. The scale at Shoalwater Bay, all those new facilities, it signalled a new standard for what training bases could look like across defence. What's really wild about ASMTI is how they cut up the work. Rather than one giant construction contract, Lang O'Rourke split Shoalwater Bay's expansion into like over 200 work packages. That's a game changer for local industry. Suddenly you've got small to medium enterprises in Rockhampton and Yeppoon getting real defence work. Bulk Fuel Australia scoring a $7 million contract, for example, just for fuel supply. And I love that the Darumbal JV Tanuba got in on consumables. You can feel the place-based impact.
Yeah. And that's all by design. The defence mandate was to keep about 80% of the contract value local in central Queensland. For Greenvale, they're going even harder, over 90% North Queensland workforce targeted. That packaging model is critical. It brings in dozens of regional suppliers, which, back in the day, felt out of reach for a lot of smaller businesses. And don't underestimate those industry forums. They were running pop-ups all over Townsville and Rocky to explain what packages were coming, what quals you'd need, and how to get pre-qualified. If you wanted in, the opportunity was there, but you had to show up, have your capability statement ready, and be visible locally.
And that's linked to the procurement readiness lesson for regional SMEs. Get involved early. Don't just wait for the tender to drop online. Honestly, we hear stories all the time. Firms that attended a pop-up or got their foot in the door at a forum ended up with a real shot at the work.
It's this model: intentional packaging, visible industry engagement, proper AIC targets. That's not just good for local jobs, but is now expected as the price of entry for big defence projects.
Let's switch to what might actually matter most in the long run: environment and Indigenous engagement. Shoalwater Bay especially had to thread the needle between delivering big infrastructure and not wrecking one of the most ecologically sensitive bits of coastline out there. The environmental and heritage approvals, they were massive hurdles. But some of the innovations like fauna corridors or proper erosion controls should honestly be best practice on every defence job. An early engagement with traditional owners set a new bar. I actually did a heritage walk on site. Those conversations absolutely changed the way the design teams thought about siting roads, trails, and new buildings. It wasn't always comfortable, but it was the right approach.
Yeah, and look, compliance here is non-negotiable. If you tried to shortcut environmental approvals, your program basically ground to a halt. On the Indigenous side, the work with the Darumbal in central Queensland and the Awamian, Gujala, and Gugu Badhun up north, that was real. Defence didn't just sign Indigenous land use agreements for optics. They built Indigenous businesses into the supply chain. On Country Workforce Solutions, for instance, got a substantial labour hire contract at Shoalwater. I think the take home is, if you're a contractor and you're not factoring this stuff in from day dot, you're going to miss out and maybe not even get past the door.
The result is better projects, environmentally responsible, culturally respectful, and far less likely to run into massive delays or backlash. That's not just about ticking legislative boxes either. It actually improves the quality and relevance of what gets built.
All right, let's look north. Greenvale really is the next frontier. CPB contractors are leading the charge. This is no small patch. It's 310,000 hectares, so nearly triple Shoalwater Bay's expansion. They're converting old cattle country into a future-proofed military training precinct. The design is impressive. It includes a KLR, that's Combined Arms Air Land Range, so infantry, armour and aircraft can train together with live fire, plus a proper urban operations, live fire village, med facilities, logistics hubs, airstrips, the works.
And none of it's possible yet, not properly, until they clear that last hurdle with the Federal Environment Department. Those assessments take forever, and for good reason, given how big and sensitive that landscape is, lots of flora and fauna to consider, and a heap of heritage sites too. But in the meantime, CPB's kicked off all their industry engagement in the region, holding more of those pop-ups and clearly looking for Indigenous partners, just like Shoalwater. It's setting the scene for another big local economic injection and hopefully more lasting partnerships with traditional owners and northern SMEs.
It's kinda textbook. Use the Shoalwater lessons, start building those regional networks early, get environmental, heritage, and Indigenous engagement locked in before the first bulldozer rolls out. This is major project thinking. With the patience and sequencing, you need to make these things work for decades, not just the ribbon cutting.
Which brings us to what all this means for folks delivering or bidding for these big defence jobs. First, environmental compliance. No wriggle room. You've got to be building those requirements and management plans in from the start, whether it's erosion controls or designing workarounds for vulnerable habitats. Trying to rush it or put it off to later will wreck your timeline and reputation, guaranteed.
And Jess, I always say, if you want to win work in this environment, you have to take the long view. You can't just turn up on the day and hope to get a contract. Multi-year projects mean multi-year relationship building, proper accreditations, attending every industry session, even when they're a three-hour drive from home, right? That's how the folks who landed work packages on Shoalwater and soon Greenvale did it. Persistence, patience, and actually being present in region pays off.
Yeah, and for SMEs especially, it comes down to being visible. Getting those capability statements in early, attending the pop-ups, showing a willingness to mobilise out to regional sites, and making genuine connections with the primes. Nothing about this is transactional. If you want the long-term opportunities, you need to play the long game and focus on actual relationship building, not just winning the next job.
It's easy to get lost in the construction, but honestly, the bigger win here is what it all means for Australia's strategy and the local economy. The ASMTI treaty binds us to Singapore for the next quarter of a century. So we're not just building facilities, we're deepening a defence partnership that matters at every level, from regional deterrence to joint doctrine.
And it's a real two-way street. When Singapore's not using the Rangers, ADF's in there, using the upgrades for our own units. Plus, all those troops, support teams and visitors funnel through Central and North Queensland now. Those are real economic impacts, driving business for local suppliers, motels, everything. And because this is locked in over 25 years, towns like Rockhampton and eventually Greenvale are going to experience sustained growth and opportunity. This is the kind of thing we talk about in the context of the US Force Posture Initiatives too. Defence infrastructure as an anchor for economic resilience in the regions.
And let's not forget the talent and capability building. People pick up skills working on these projects and carry them into other sectors too. Defence industry investment often gets talked about in terms of tanks and helicopters, but the local multipliers, training, upskilling, business creation, those ripple effects will last long after the treaty sunsets.
So where's this all heading, and what should everyone in the sector be looking at next? For starters, technology keeps changing the game. Things like drone warfare and littoral manoeuvre are already shaping new plans for Greenvale and Shoalwater, so the physical facilities have to evolve with that. Infrastructure isn't static, and neither is how defence trains. If you want to keep up, adaptability and ongoing innovation are non-negotiable.
And the need to keep Indigenous participation and cultural heritage front of mind doesn't end with initial construction. I'd argue, as these projects expand, things like advisory committees made up of traditional owners need to have ongoing input. So the engagement doesn't just stop when the ribbon's cut. It's about stewardship and making sure future upgrades respect country in a continuous way, not as a one-off requirement.
It also comes back to SMEs thinking strategically. If you want to stay in defence and grow your footprint beyond this contract or that tender, you need to keep building those partnerships, lean into industry forums, and look for where you can offer something genuinely new, whether it's technology, service models, or just better ways to collaborate. Don't get comfortable. Defence will always need people who add value and solve problems, not just deliver what's been done before.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're about to step into phase 5 of the course, which is all about customer relationship management. So every lesson we've touched on here, long-term relationships, understanding stakeholder needs, continuous engagement, they flow straight into how you approach business growth in this sector. Jess, any final thoughts for this week?
Honestly, just don't lose sight of why this is all happening. To deliver genuine, lasting value for defence and the communities involved. That calls for a mindset shift towards stewardship, innovation, and relationships. So thanks for joining us, and we hope you got as much out of this episode as we did talking it through.
Yeah, big thanks for listening. Jess, always a pleasure. We'll see everyone next week as we begin unlocking what CRM means in defence and how to turn project experience into real business value. Take care.
Catch you then, Darian. Bye for now.